Welcome to MGO Podcast 6.12. I know that didn't go particularly well, but it did go the way it had to go. I mean, Dennis Norfleet does something crazy awesome and the flag's on the field and you're just like, that sucks. But it is also the plot of this novel. That sucks. But the plot of the novel, that sucks, has just come to a conclusion. Now we're in the denouement. So we had a moment in there,
a fleeting moment of joy.
So actually a really smart play by Dennis Norfleet, because a punt goes off a Maryland player, at which point the worst thing that can happen is that's where the ball starts. You can't fumble the ball anymore because if it's been illegally touched.
Yes.
Grabs the ball, runs through a bunch of guys, manages to outrun a couple of guys at the end, scores a touchdown. Michigan's up 2 touchdowns, and then there is the flag. In one way, I'm disappointed, but in another way, that's kind of how it had to go, right? That's how it had to
There were a happen. Lot of, like, this is how it had to be moments during the game on Saturday.
Yeah, so Michigan
like
loses.
Like 12 of them.
Yeah, Michigan loses to Maryland 23-16 in a game that had the usual litany of problems, errors from everybody.
Yep. I mean,
it's just who they are now. They're just a team that screws everything up. And you can't really point to one person. You point to many, many people.
Most of them, I would say, at this point.
So Michigan has Maryland basically bottled up until they go tempo.
Yep.
And tempo completely destroys Michigan's defense because that's just always what happens. Mm-hmm. And then they manage to shut this drive down, get a field goal attempt. They rough the kicker. And then on the next play, Maryland actually has a pretty clever play set up where they take a – have a couple guys go in motion.
Mm-hmm. And Michigan shifts to the field side.
Right.
And then they boot out to the boundary.
Yeah, and then they bring a receiver into motion. They've tipped man coverage, right? So all the tackle on that side has to do is flank one of the defensive ends, and it's done.
And basically by alignment before the play. That was already done for them. That was a very nice play call.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool way to manipulate Michigan's defense. So they score right after that to tie the game up. And then they have a 10-play, 78-yard drive to go ahead at the end. And then Michigan has Devin Funches drop 2 passes on their attempted response drive to end that. Previous fourth down throw to Funches was way behind him and not catchable. And it's just like, well, that's who we are.
Yeah, it was fitting. That's for sure. I don't know how much else there is to say.
I mean, Weil misses a chip shot field goal.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, special teams were a disaster.
So it just kind of ends up being the same kind of game where the rush defense does a pretty good job. I know the quarterback got a number of yards and then they kind of faded at the end, but that's what happens to them. And you see the other team get some big plays based on tempo that Michigan is unprepared for.
Including one where Michigan has to call a timeout because they're subbing while the other team is going up tempo and the other team is not subbing. And that's usually not conducive to success.
No, that's bad. And it looks like all of these games always look. And it's the last time I have to see it in person, at least, because nobody can say, well, what if Brady wins out now? I mean, they can, but
technically, yes.
The answer is they're 6-6. Don't care how much Ohio State struggled against Indiana yesterday. They're not winning.
No,
Columbus.
You'd be hard pressed to find a Michigan fan who thinks they even have a remote shot.
Yeah. So it's over.
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, we've been saying that it's over on this podcast since the Utah game.
That's true. It's over. And I think looking at Hoke in the press conference yesterday, just seeing him on the screen while I was writing up the gamer, it looked like he knew it was over. It was a very, like, resigned press conference.
Would you say he was fully aware that it's over?
You know, I wouldn't quite go that far.
Yeah, and, that's kind of, I guess I wouldn't say I expected us to lose to Maryland at home, but I
did not expect it.
Yeah, it was just like, well, that happened. And, the worst thing about this is, like, I have no feelings for anything. Like, I go into these games and I don't get nervous. Like, that's the whole point of sports, is to be nervous.
To feel something.
Yeah. Most of the time, nervousness, and then you either are sad or happy at the end, and now it's just like, well, they lost, but I wouldn't have felt any better if they won, and now Brady has not even the whisper of hope that people had been saying that he has, so honestly, yeah, whatever.
I spent much of the game yesterday kind of weighing the pros and cons of like, okay, Michigan wins and Devin Gardner goes out with a home game, with a win on senior day, which would have been nice, especially since he had a pretty nice looking touchdown run. Had some nice runs in there. Kind of looked like vintage Devin Gardner with his legs, not necessarily his arm.
No.
And then weighing that against, well, this would be the end, certainly. And by the end of the game, I think I was very much on the latter side, where it was like, you know what, this is probably for the best.
Yeah. The crazy thing about this is they don't even try to go deep. Like,
no.
We got on board just for, you know,
going deep exclusively.
Yes. But there's got to be some middle ground between that and what's going on here, where I think the last time they really threw it downfield at Funchess couldn't have been in the Notre Dame game. It feels like it was in the Notre Dame game.
God.
And there was one play where they tried a double move and Funchess was bracketed, but it's just like, you know,
you got to go to that more than once.
If he's 50-50 to drop a ball, you might as well make it 50-50, 30 yards downfield. Like, it was boggling to watch them not even try to run a fade against Will Likely, who's 5'7".
Yeah.
And he's like 5'7" in quotation marks. Like, that's his...
He is not a big dude.
He's a tiny, tiny dude.
Yeah, I'm not a big advocate for the fade normally, but that would have been a situation to bust it out, especially since Michigan has no real running game to speak of.
Well, they did. They did.
They kind of did on Saturday, but...
I mean,
they almost got
300 yards rushing, and even if you take the 52 off that were from the fake punt, it's still a pretty good day.
Quite good by Michigan standards.
Yes, I was going to say something, but then I decided that that was not accurate. And, you know, the defense played well, but I think the stats kind of overrate them because they can't tell you that, like, the eighth string Maryland wide receivers decided that they just weren't going to catch anything today.
Yeah, there were like four or five drop slants that were... just like, come on, man, you're a college receiver. But Michigan was doing that too, so quite a bit.
They were. I mean, you just watch these games and it's like, this is not good football. Neither of these teams is any good.
No, I keep getting home from these games at like 8 o'clock and flipping on the primetime games and just pining for anything that'll look remotely like what I'm seeing on the screen because it's actually like aesthetically pleasing football.
Oh, well, I mean, I've fallen out of love with college football entirely. And it's not college football's fault. It's Michigan's fault.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't, like, none of it has any relevance. Like, when Michigan was relevant, I would be like rooting for teams ahead of them to lose games so that they would move up.
Where like the USC UCLA game yesterday might have had some relevance because maybe like Michigan could move ahead of one of those teams or something. But no, that's not the case.
Like two teams playing football that I don't care about because it just reminds me that, one, everybody's better than us, and two, I have no self-interest in the outcome of this game.
Yes.
And that was a great thing about football before the end times.
Before it just got destroyed. That
you could turn on anything, and you could like make it about Michigan. And now nothing is about Michigan.
Except the Colorado School of Mines.
Yes. So people are saying that we shouldn't fire Brady before the Ohio State game, but action needs to be taken. Because our number one target is now available because Mines goes out in the first round of the Division II playoffs. Magnificent achievement just to reach it. And there was another Stitt article in the Fox Sports 1, the Fox Sports 1. That's what we're going to call it. It's the Ohio State of newspaper. That's not a newspaper. It's an online site. I had a long week, man.
Yeah, I know. Same here.
Yeah. Do we have anything else to say about football other than that we've fallen out of love with it and we wish that Michigan could not be bad at it?
Get Harbaugh.
Harbaugh?
Yeah.
That is your idea.
I don't know what else to say about football at this point.
Oh, we forgot the very Brady 2-minute drill.
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, it kind of worked.
It kind of worked. They had a 2-minute drill where they ran the same running play five straight times. And that somehow worked.
Completed a pass to Jake Butt with 1 second left on the clock. Falling out of bounds.
They accepted an offsides penalty by Maryland, got to the line, and then waited 4 seconds to snap on a running clock.
Mm-hmm.
As the crowd started going, as they do. And almost.
Especially now.
And they almost ran out of time in the first half. Like, if it was one beat the other way, like, Michigan would have completed a pass down to the five and then would have had to walk off the field with nothing.
Which would have been so incredibly fitting. But
that would have been the most Brady two-minute drill.
Yeah. Instead, this was just a very Brady two-minute drill. Yeah. God.
I was kind of a little disappointed that we didn't get the most Brady Hoke two-minute drill.
Yeah, I think by the end, well, especially once the second half started playing out, it was just kind of like pulling for those hilarious, encapsulating the entire 10-year moments. Although the halftime show did a wonderful job of that, in my opinion, by simulating the extinction of the dinosaurs.
Well,
I know it was a shot at Ohio State that was actually kind of crappy.
But let's talk about this.
Okay.
Let's dive in. should we give this its own segment? Probably not. Let's just talk about it. We're going to talk about it. So Michigan has a halftime show where they show the Ohio State dinosaur on the field. And this is the Ohio State dinosaur that got them in a frickin' iPad commercial.
Yes.
Where they were actually locomoting the dinosaur. They're making it walk.
It was really dang cool.
And they do these kinds of shows, and Michigan is apparently fed up with it. But instead of putting on an equally cool show, they just made a static dinosaur and then ran a ball into it.
Which looked less impressive than a locomoting dinosaur.
And it's just like, that is so Michigan. The last like 7 years of Michigan where it's just like, we're going to say that we're the equal or better of Ohio State, and then we are not going to perform as well as the Ohio State thing that we are accusing or not accusing. Whatever. I've had a long week. Shut up, people. Hear you laughing on your iTunes. Is that what they call the kids these days, the iTunesers?
Yes.
Yes?
That's the generation after the millennials, I think.
The iTunesers. All of you can shut up. But it was just like, if you're gonna call them out for that, you can't just like make a dumb joke about how asteroids exist. You have to be better than them.
Yeah, do something. Yeah. It worked. It worked to encapsulate how crappy everything is. It didn't work as like a halftime show necessarily.
Well,
but it wasn't a bad halftime show, but they set the bar very high with awesome Ohio State halftime show and did not remotely come close to it.
I kind of liked their look back at the history of the Michigan Marching Band and stuff that they used to do. It's just that when you bring in a band that has been in a freaking iPad commercial because they're doing cool stuff, and then the stuff that you do isn't as cool.
Will not end up in an iPad commercial.
Just don't do that.
Yeah.
Just go do something else. Like, do the hula hoop thing. No, it's not the hula girl thing with the Hawaiian war chant where you have like, have you ever seen this?
Probably, but I don't pay nearly as close attention to halftime.
They had this thing back in the day where they would have a hula girl and her skirt would move as they played the Hawaiian war chant. So just do that.
Yeah.
Unless that's not politic anymore. I don't, a stick figure of a person wearing a skirt, but you never know. So we've got the football team and the band. Is there anything else we want to take shots at?
I feel like that's enough for right
yeah,
now. That's,
yeah.
That's probably, I mean, I don't know.
The announced attendance of 101,000
was laughable, but you know, it's paid attendance. So you knew that figure was going to be somewhere above 100,000 and a total farce, and it was.
I would say probably 80.
Yeah, I'd say at best.
I mean,
the beginning of the game.
The student section looks pretty empty, but everywhere else was just as empty. It's just more spread out.
Yeah, it is super spacious. And you could, and this was one where from the box you could tell how roomy it was down there. And there have been other games where it's kind of tough to necessarily be able to tell unless you're right down there.
Yeah.
And you're going by elbow room, but this was like how many seats are between the people in the rows.
Yeah, there's three stages in the people aren't at Michigan Stadium or are at Michigan Stadium. There's one, which is the sardine game, which is where you know that every seat is actually filled because
you can't breathe.
They're on top of you.
Yeah.
There's the, wow, it's spacious game, which is most MAC games where the row is full, but you have 6 more inches than you would otherwise because there's two or three people missing in every row. And then there's whatever that was yesterday where You have spacious acres. Spacious acres. And that is the main reason that I was never buying any of this Brady Hoke could come back stuff anyway, because
who's going to watch?
Who's going to pay to watch?
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
I mean, you're already struggling to keep people engaged on game day, and you're going to bring this guy back. That's a one-way ticket to hell.
They're having a tough time keeping the beat reporters engaged at this point. I don't know if you saw the MLive video from postgame, but they went 2 minutes, and then it started raining, and they quit, and it was perfect. So props to Baumgartner.
How long do they usually go?
Longer than that, I think, because it was really like they looked up, the rain started coming down, and they were just like, okay, we're done. It was beautiful.
The beat writer like video thing is always a mystery to me. Like, Sam does it all the time. Like, all these people who are like, well, we need to incorporate video. But that video,
people want to see our beautiful faces.
The video should not be of sports writers. No offense to any sports writers listening to the podcast, but it's just...
all none of you.
There might be some aspiring.
That's true.
But like, the video that people don't want to watch is you in front of a camera holding a microphone with nothing else. Just like, take that and write it down, and then I'm not going to spend 2 minutes listening to something that I could scan in 30 seconds.
I'll say this. I clicked on that one specifically because they said it was 2 minutes long and then they quit. So that was why I watched that.
All right. Video. So we've taken shots at the football team, the band, and now sports writers standing in front of cameras. I think we're making progress.
Yeah. Yeah. We're moving on up. Now, if we reach too far, we're going to hit the basketball team and then we're going to reach some problems.
Well.
Because there are people taking shots there. And that's crazy.
Well, actually, what an excellent segue.
As I walk this land of broken dreams, I have visions of many things, but happiness is just an illusion filled with sadness and confusion. What becomes of the broken hearted who had love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some.
So our second segment will be about the basketball team, because we get to talk about something that is not
soul sucking.
I was going to say football, but accurate.
Same thing.
So Michigan has a big game today, in fact.
Yeah, against Oregon.
And we've seen them take a couple of warm-up games against pretty legit teams.
Yes.
Toronto.
Where does that one come from?
Toronto. Which I apparently think is the new name for the University of Detroit, has a senior version of Juwan Howard Jr. and a couple of major college transfers. Including
the well-traveled Brandon Kearney.
Yes. And they played pretty well for their skill level, although Juwan Howard Jr. did have to take 23 shots himself.
Yes.
And a lot of those shots that he took that went down were of the circus variety.
Yeah, he's definitely a volume shooter.
Well, at least he was in this game, because Michigan's defense actually kept them in it for a long period in the first half when their shots just weren't falling. And it's not like their shots weren't falling because they were bad shots for the most part.
They had some real, like, painful rim outs in the first half of that game.
Those threes that back-to-back just went in and stayed in and then decided that, nah, I'm going to break this lease I have on the rim and leave. Like, hey, man, you can't do that. You signed a lease. Yep.
It's been a long week.
Yeah. So, you know, they struggled and then they made their run at the end to pad it out to a comfortable distance and it felt pretty much fine.
Yeah. And especially since, you know, we're looking at the Oregon game that is imminent and Detroit went into halftime against Oregon last week tied. This is not a bad team. They're a relatively well coached team. And in terms of, you know, Horizon League squads, they have a decent amount of talent because they like to just take all the guys who left Detroit and then decided that they need a change of scenery and kind of bring them back into the fold. Or they bring in guys like Juwan Howard Jr. It wasn't a pretty win for Michigan, and there are definitely some concerns about the lack of even minutes for the freshmen right now, where they just weren't even able to stay out on the court.
Yeah, we should talk about that, because the minutes for the big three went 40 for Walton and 38 for both LeVert and Irvin. which is a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I expect those guys to be averaging around 35 minutes a game this year, and that, I think, is something that they can handle. But 38 to 40, especially in an early season game against Detroit, is a little disconcerting.
Well, I mean, they were consistently in a game that looked like it might be going down to the wire. So if they had hit those threes, and
I don't think John Beilein was doing crazy things substitution wise. Yeah. It's just that other guys need to develop.
I mean, they had this lineup where they had those three guys and Spike on the floor with Max Bielefeld.
And that was the go-to lineup. And
if that continues, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Michigan can be huge. Like, if they have Cam Chapman out there and they have Ricky Doyle out there, they are a huge team.
Yes.
But the Spike/Bielefeld lineup is probably the smallest Beilein team we've ever seen.
Which is saying something.
And Bielefeld, you know, he knows the things to do, but in terms of defense, he provides absolutely no shot blocking.
Yeah, and you could see, I mean, Detroit were just attacking the rim with impunity because there was no resistance. If they got past a perimeter defender, it was going to be a layup.
Yeah.
And that's not going to work come this week, most likely, and Big Ten season, definitely.
I mean, the one thing that I think might be the case is that Detroit was running a five-guard lineup out there for, I think, the entirety of the second half.
Yeah, they were running quite small.
As soon as their big got a couple fouls on him, they just stapled him to the bench. And what they were doing was kind of working, and Michigan was content to match up. So if we're going up against a team that actually has a couple of 6'10 guys, I think you're going to see Doyle and Denal by necessity.
Yeah, and I also think, honestly, I'm not sure why Doyle only got 2 minutes. That seemed a little bizarre, but
His 2 minutes were actually—he seemed fine in them. I'm not really sure what he's been doing in practice that makes him so unviable for playing time, because he looks pretty good when he gets on the floor. He's been efficient converting. He's been able to hedge hard, which people have concerns about his mobility, but I haven't seen anything to be that worried about.
And his length makes up for that mobility factor.
He's got super long arms, and he's a legit 6'10", and can battle guys on the block. So I'm a little confused about his playing time.
It did seem like, at least with the other guys, that Beilein was maybe taking advantage of some teaching moments that were available to him, because Donald got the hook right after he missed that layup off the really great pass from Spike. Where you just have to go up stronger than that if you're 6'10 and right at the basket. That was a miss that I'm sure Beilein sat him down and talked to him about, and maybe was like, watch how Max goes up for the rest of the game. He goes up around the basket pretty strong. He knows how to use his body. He's actually not bad. You know, he was 2-for-3 on 2-pointers in this game. He was getting buckets around the hoop because he knows how to, you know, he's not an athletic marvel by any means. He's 6'7". He's not really a center, but they're playing him there. But he knows how to, the reason he's been semi-effective and quite effective for the last week is that he knows where to be, and he knows how to use his body to get the most out of what talent he has.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing about the rotation is that DJ Wilson came in and was really overwhelmed in this game.
Yeah.
And then he got another shot at playing time, and Doyle just stayed on the bench. It was like, I don't know if I would do that, because the 2 minutes that DJ Wilson had, he had three fouls in them.
Yeah, one of those was real ticky-tack.
Yeah, well, the refereeing was very inconsistent. Like, people were going to the basket and taking, like, shoulders from guys. Like,
Derek Walton took a couple, like, football hits.
And there's no calls, and it's not even close to a decision if your shoulder is the thing making contact with the offensive player. You have to be square to the guy, and you have to maybe take contact in the chest. But you're moving and you're impacting a guy who's taking a shot with your shoulder, and they're not calling it. And it's just like, I don't know what these guys are looking at, but.
Well, and it would have been one thing if they were consistently calling it like that on both ends for 40 minutes. But in the second half, they tightened it up a lot. And then, you know, you had like this whole let it go period. And then all of a sudden it was touch fouls were getting called on the perimeter. And it was why are you doing this?
Defense was super aggressive, which means Michigan had an opportunity for a couple back cuts, and they weren't getting the calls that you need to make if you're going to make basketball an attractive game. And we saw the result of that in the first half. And it's just very frustrating, because some of these things are not close. Like, it's just like,
no, I mean,
it's a foul.
There was at least one where you could like hear the arm slap on Walton.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when everybody in the building but the officials know what the call is, that's a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But college basketball refs, it is just going to be like that.
That is true. So Michigan has a problem at the 4 and 5. They do very little offense out of it, and defense has been questionable. Chapman is improving. I mean, he hasn't gotten burned as badly as he did in his first couple games.
He seems to be getting better positionally, and yeah. I do like his upside. I mean, he's got really active hands on defense, and that's something that with this team, they seem to have an increased emphasis on forcing turnovers this year a little bit, and he could really play a part in that. And he's got the handles to be able to run the ball up the court in transition, too, although he's shown a bit of a disturbing habit to want to go coast to coast every time he gets the ball in on the fast break opportunity so far this year, and not passing to his very skilled teammates who may be open.
Yeah, and his shots just aren't going down.
They're not. But, I mean, it seems like Beeline's giving him the green light from three, and we'll see whether that stays for the rest of the year, because he's and, you know, he's taking him when he's got him, and I don't know if his range extends out quite that far yet.
He's a Beeline four, so if he's got an open three, you got to take it. That's just...
Yeah, and, you know, Michigan was able to get away with Glenn Robinson hitting those at around 30% for his career, and that was enough to... Stretch defenses kind of, but you also hit Glenn Robinson's ability to thunderously throw the ball through the basket.
Yeah, but you got a 45% E field goal rate on an open three in the corner isn't great, but it's good enough so that you're at least treading water with that shot.
Yeah. I think the more surprising thing has been the number of shots that he's been getting around the free throw line, where he's been kind of diving in there and taking some mid-range shots that are
the
not.
Mid-range shots are right. Bad.
And especially since with him, you know, there have been a couple, like his, as far as I remember, his like two best shots this year have been just mid-range catch and shoots where someone found him like one or two steps inside the three-point line, hit him, no dribble, just put it up. And his shot looks really good when he's able to get those opportunities. But when he's going off the dribble, it starts to look a little awkward. And when he extends out beyond the three-point line, it looks like he's not quite comfortable at that range yet.
Well, one of the things that has irritated me so far is that there's a lot of... I'm trying to come up with a good acronym for this kind of shot, but the contested isolation long twos, which is currently KILT, except with a C.
Kind of works.
I'm going to have to come up with something else. But you take a guy off the dribble and you pull up.
It's the NBA.
It's like a Kobe shot where it's just like, well, and you know, when you have 35 seconds on a shot clock instead of 24.
There's far less need for those type of shots.
Exactly. And sometimes in the NBA, you're just going to have this 15-footer that you're going to have to take. Far less the case in college, especially with the three-point line where it is.
Yeah.
And Michigan is not taking those shots at a point where I'm like, okay, I guess that's what we got this possession, which is like with under 10 seconds on the clock. They're taking him with 25 seconds on the clock, which is bad. And I got mad when Hardaway did this. And now it seems like there's two or three guys who are taking these shots. And it's just like, it doesn't matter if you hit that one that you remember. Those are bad, bad shots. You're not pulling the defense out of alignment. So your offensive rebound chances are poor. The shots themselves go down at a 30% clip, which is okay when they're a three-pointer in the corner, but it's not okay when it's a two-pointer with little chance to get an offensive rebound.
Yeah, and what's a little worrisome about this is if you look at the shot breakdown of what this team's doing compared to previous years, those mid-range shots right now are mostly taking the place of what would have been three-pointers before, three-point attempts for Michigan. And obviously you're capping the ceiling on those just by stepping inside the arc. You're not hitting them at a higher rate.
No, because you never do.
And this team has actually been pretty decent about getting shots at the basket. A lot of that, I think, has been transition play because they've been stellar in that regard. But what seems like where last year you would have maybe a high screen and roll and a kick out to a guy in the corner, you're getting guys kind of just dribbling around and then fading away.
Yeah.
And that's not a good trade-off, obviously.
No, so they need to get rid of the kilts. I'm going to have to come up with something else. Because that's bad. That's what I think.
Yeah. I guess we could call them the Kobe's, but we already have Kobe assists, so that might get confusing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a totally different equation in the NBA. And
The Kobe's do lead to Kobe assists on a fair number of occasions.
Well, not when they're like pull-up jumpers.
That's true.
Pull-up jumpers are never going to take a center out of position and try to block your shot.
Yeah.
unless it's Amir Williams. So, Spike, one unadulterated positive is that Spike's game has really taken a leap forward.
Absolutely. He's not dribbling the air out of the ball as much as he used to. I mean, he did do donuts in the lane. But that was kind of unusual this year.
And he's hilarious.
It was great. And there's been less of the stuff where he would, like, first 2 years he was here, he did a lot of like driving baseline under the basket and then jumping into the air and looking for a pass, and that hasn't really been as heavily a part of his game so far.
He's still driving baseline, but
he does that, but now he's finding people without picking up his dribble.
Yeah.
Also threatening to shoot.
He is taking a lot more shots, I think, just to get people aware of the fact that he might put it up.
Yeah.
And they haven't been going down, but they've been good shots. Some of them have been reverse layups that haven't gone. He hasn't gotten anything blocked yet. I think that's obviously partially because of the competition, but he's just finding crafty little ways to get to the bucket and then do something while there. And the finishing rate hasn't been great yet, but I think that'll come.
Yeah, and it was nice to finally see him hit a couple three-pointers against Detroit. He hadn't hit one so far this year, which was you knew that was going to come back, obviously. But to see him confidently drain a 30-footer and hold his form up there for a little while was nice.
Well, I'm not really worried about any of the three-point shooting stuff. Like, I was actually a little irritated, in-game irritated, about Irvin missing some shots. And then at the end of the game, he's 4-10 from three, with at least two that rimmed out in ostentatious fashion. So, you know, the shooting is going to be there. Michigan had five guys last year who shot 40% from three. Four of them are back.
Yeah.
And they're all getting big minutes, so...
Yeah, and LeVert hasn't found his outside shot yet, and that will come.
Yeah.
And that's going to probably help replace some of these mid-range shots that aren't looking so hot right now and make the offense a little bit more efficient.
Right. And I mean, if there's 15 seconds on the clock and that's what you're getting, then that's what you're getting. But just don't make that your primary idea ever, is my thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that should not be the go-to end of clock or even any time in the clock.
No, I mean, if it's at the end of the clock, I mean, and that's what you got, that's what you got. So.
But it's been a little surprising that they haven't run as much pick and roll, I don't think, as they have in the past by quite a bit. And I think that might be part of why the offense is a little disjointed right now. That's been their thing the last couple of years. And right now they're not really running much of it. And I don't know whether that's because the bigs aren't comfortable running it yet, or whether they think it's better to spread everybody out and let LeVert and Walton work off the dribble. But...
Well, you do have a couple of guys who can just get to the basket this year in a way that even Stauskas was not usually capable of last year. I mean, he had the occasional drive to the bucket where you're like, God damn, white boy. But
Walton's ability to get to the 10 is nuts.
Yeah,
he's been awesome so far this year.
So they do have that ability, but I think the pick and roll is something that you should see come back. We've made a great deal of hay with it ever since the second year at Darius Morris, so... It's been the bread and butter, and it hasn't really been a focal point yet. So, goddamn.
we're fifth in offensive efficiency.
Is that a surprise?
Kind of, after those last two games. I guess not really, but...
Bucknell was
They just rein it in on Bucknell.
Yeah. And then I don't think that the D2 games count.
No, they don't. Actually, I think they do for the overall stats, which might explain the...
No. Because they have to be... schedule adjusted.
No, that's right.
And you can't schedule adjust a D2T.
For Hillsdale. No. Well, the one thing that Michigan has been doing exceptionally well on offense is just not turning it over, which continues to be a thing that Michigan does really, really well. Yeah. But
par for the course.
Their turnover rate is below 13% right now.
That's pretty good.
Which is phenomenal. And what's been
and they hit
most
free
impressive.
Throws.
They're hitting free throws, and with the turnover thing, it's not just... the big guys not turning it over or whatever. The main ball handlers all have great assist to turnover ratios right now. LeVert's handling the ball really well. Walton's assist rate is actually quite low right now because LeVert's doing most of the distribution and Spike when he's out there.
And that's one of the things that will come to. Thing about assist rate is it's kind of zero sum.
Yeah.
So if someone else is having a lot of assists, you're not able to get those. The overall assist to turnover rate is pretty freaking good.
Yes, it is. And they're I mean, hitting their free throws, hitting their threes when they're taking them. The two-point percentage is the one thing that you'd like to see get bumped up a little bit. And, I can't imagine Cam Chapman is going to shoot 17% for the duration of the season. That doesn't seem like that's going to happen. And I think the big men will get a little bit more time. We've seen Doyle show an ability to finish quite nicely around the basket.
Further making it strange that he only got 2 minutes against Detroit. But
yes. But I don't know. Who knows what they're seeing in practice? Who knows if the ankle's still bothering him? Maybe. I don't know.
I hope that's the case. I hope it's some sort of injury thing, because you really need someone who provides a post presence. And Bielefeld has done an admirable job of holding the fort down right now, but I think
top 10 nationally in O rating.
We're a broken record when we say that he's not going to be
the long-term solution this season, no.
All right. Why don't we talk to Jamie? Should we do that? I guess we should.
We probably should.
It's tradition, but like, what is he going to say about the Big Ten? Maybe he can explain how Indiana barely beat Lamar last night. We welcome in Jamie Mack of Just Cover Blog. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. Unfortunately, another shaky afternoon for the Big Ten. You know, a week after Melvin Gordon brought the conference such accolades with his record-breaking performance, that record actually gets broken by some dude at Oklahoma.
Oh, fresh.
And then, after Michigan and Northwestern thrilled America by trying to go for 0-0 regulation score and falling just short, Virginia Tech and Wake Forest pulled it off yesterday. So two of the Big Ten's better moments just down the drain. At least Indiana still has the SEC East title on its resume. So
have we decided on a way to pronounce VT00 woof?
No, I think we still have them. We still have them there. So
like VTUF.
Yeah, I think Moon still beats them. For sure.
Almost better than the fact that game ended 0-0 in regulation is that it went into double overtime and ended 6-3.
Yeah, well, so the thing is that the Michigan Stadium scoreboard at one point had it 0-0 in 6 overtimes, which
I didn't see that.
I knew it was not the case. I knew that was not true, but
you
I
could
saw
dream.
It, and it was just like, oh, the impossible dream. So...
Yeah, there were like multiple media members streaming that game on Watch ESPN up in the press box out of morbid curiosity, and I may or may not have been one of them.
If Michigan ends up hiring Scott Loeffler, that will be
the most Michigan hire ever.
Century. But they won't, because that would create a riot, I think.
Yeah, that game should eliminate him from contention, right?
Do people care enough to riot at this point?
There are about 65 different Scott Loeffler offensive coordinator games that should eliminate him from contention.
Yeah.
I mean, it is amazing how he has continued to get jobs. He's like a mini Lane Kiffin in terms of like performance versus job outcomes. But anyway, they beat Ohio State, so there's that.
Yeah, there you go. And they're still beating Ohio State. I mean, you know, if people are starting to turn the corner on Ohio State's playoff chances, and they actually had a nice win against Duke, Virginia Tech, that is, and then they lose to Wake Forest like that.
Anyway, Michigan State annihilates Rutgers. Do we have anything to say about this game? It looked pretty empty, which is amazing. Like, this is the best Michigan State has been since the 60s, and people just aren't showing up for these games.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to really keep an eye on it. And was it less than a sellout? Is that what you just said?
I don't know if it was less than a sellout, but, you know, I just flicked the game on, and it looked like not as bad as Michigan, but they have 30,000 fewer seats there, right? So the student section was half empty. It didn't look particularly packed. Tickets were going for $3 on StubHub. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, this is a team that is going to one of those, I guess they're not BCS bowls anymore, but they're going to be in one of those
big time bowl,
one of those New Year's, like New Year's Eve bowls now.
Right.
And this is unprecedented in the history of all of these people's lifetimes, except for like the super oldsters. And there's just no enthusiasm for going to these games. This is actually the Jim Delaney legacy. When you see Michigan State playing Rutgers in Maryland, and they can't get ticket prices above $10, Like, nobody wants to see these games.
That's what I was going to mention, is if they're playing, you know, a more traditional Big Ten team, you know, maybe that is the difference between a few extra thousand fans showing up just from recognition only. But, you know, playing Rutgers, you know, I mean, I think to a lot of Michigan State fans, it almost felt like playing a MAC team. You know, they did it. I don't think they were interested at all in the game.
And that's a totally reasonable take.
Honestly, it is. Like, if they're playing Iowa, do ticket prices go up a lot? Yes, they do.
I'll put it this way.
And the place is juiced up, too, because, you know, Iowa, I mean, they've played some great games over the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan State heads into this game saying they're taking their number one receiver and starting him on both sides of the ball. I don't think they do that if they're playing, like, a passably decent Big Ten team, but Tony Lippett
played corner?
Both sides, played corner, actually looked pretty darn good.
What?
Played into the second half at corner.
Why?
Because Mark D'Antonio was talking about, or Pat Narduzzi was talking about how he's a bona fide NFL prospect at that position. I also think they're not particularly pleased with Mylon Hicks, although they're not saying that. But Tony Lippett played corner on Saturday.
Did he start his career at Michigan State on the defensive side of the ball?
He did.
His
freshman year, he was a corner, so it does
Isn't
make a
like
certain amount of sense.
6'3"?
He's a big corner. No, he's like 6'1". He's just kind of a bulky 6'1".
Yeah.
But still, he doesn't look like a corner.
No.
But he can apparently play it, at least against Rutgers, and be pretty effective. Yeah.
Well, good for him.
The team that put up 400 passing yards against us.
Yes. that very same one.
I did draft Tony Lippett. Draft again, by the way.
Thanks for... Yeah. Once again, Brad Craddock.
Winning
on the game.
So, I mean, we've been talking about the collapse of the ticket bubble for years, and I think it's finally happened. Like, even Michigan State is not selling out. And it's just, at some point, you have to lower the prices, not because you want to make less money, but you have to make your TV product look attractive. And you turn on a Purdue game, and there's nobody in the stadium, and it's like, I don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same problem that college hockey has been dealing with their tournament forever, because they refuse to take it out of these completely antiseptic buildings that house 20,000 people, but there's only four there. And they refuse to put them at home rinks. And it makes the playoff look terrible. It makes the playoff feel unimportant. And at some point, you're going to have to put people in stadiums no matter how little money you're getting out of that.
It makes it feel Bush League, and it looks Bush League.
Yeah.
And with, I mean, the Big Ten has to take into account that, you know what? In November, you're going to have to give some extra incentive for people to come and show up to the game because it's 40 degrees out and raining.
Yeah.
And that's not the case at the Swamp or anything like that. People will show up to that because you can walk outside in a t-shirt in November. Not so much the case here. And there's not, you know, the Big Ten seems to think that they're on level footing with the SEC, which is absurd. So you get to see these just, you know, swaths of empty seats at pretty much every game now.
Yeah, and when people talk about how Michigan's ticket prices are on par with their peer group, like,
what the heck is our peer group right now?
What is our peer group? Is it Ohio State? Because we're 2-11 going on 2-12 against those guys in the past 14 years. Or is it more like Purdue in terms of performance? Well, probably not Purdue, but Northwestern.
That wasn't much better. And they play in a glorified high school stadium.
They do play in a glorified high school stadium. But I guess we should talk about the games instead of just bitching about Jim Delaney.
We sure?
All right. I think, you know, one thing, and, you know, I don't know how to say this without sounding like I'm letting everybody off the hook, but I think some, especially like this year, I get the sense that the fans just know better here in Big Ten country. Like, you know, you were talking about the weather, Ace, but I think in general, none of us are really expecting good football games when we go to them. And by the time November rolls around, it's just sort of, you know, the apathy pull sometimes can be so strong. Like, you know, we weren't expecting a good game yesterday in Ann Arbor, and they weren't expecting a good, interesting game up in East Lansing. They weren't expecting a good, interesting game in Columbus. You know, nobody was expecting a fun game, really, in most venues yesterday in the Big Ten, and it feels like that's been going on almost every week all season.
Well, and we're about to feel the bite of this in the basketball season, which has a ludicrous 8 single plays versus 5 play teams you play twice. And it's just, there was no competitive justification for adding either of these teams. 12 was a situation that worked, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect, but...
You could have a title game.
You added Nebraska, which is you know, sold out 340 straight games, always going to be at least a decent football team, and they've turned around their basketball program in a way that obviously Rutgers is completely incapable of. And what have these people brought to anyone in the conference who isn't Jim Delaney or a television executive? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. And
we need to add more conference basketball games. I know we're segueing into basketball too much, but we need to play more conference games and play them now, like in November and December. I don't have a problem with that. And that might be the only way to squeeze in the 20 or 22 necessary games to at least make the conference round robin somewhat interesting again.
Well, I keep throwing out the Scottish Premier League solution.
Yes. That's you know, you always have unique ideas that will never happen, but are always fun to talk about.
I mean, that would just be great.
It is never happening.
Figuring out all the college sport problems.
Why isn't it going to happen?
Because nobody's that creative. Who's running any of these things?
Nobody will think like that.
What in the history of college football has led you to believe, or college sports has led you to believe that they're going to do something that interesting?
That's true. I mean, college hockey is kind of in the same boat right now. Like, they need to create kind of a Michigan trophy so that these off-season, these non-conference games actually have something meaningful, and that would make the GLI really cool, because instead of a two-game series, you have your entire first half of the season leading up to the Joe.
Yeah. Yeah, and you see, I mean, the MAC is able to figure this out. I mean, they've got, like, their Michigan MAC trophy that they hand out every year for their, I mean, you know, it's just a few football games. It's a round-robin thing that you can care about if you're following those teams and have some interest in. And, you know, Western tweets out a thing yesterday that, you know, showing them holding up this trophy because they won the Michigan MAC trophy this year. And that's at least something interesting to play for. And it's that it's, you know, we get.
Well, I mean, I think that European soccer does a really good job of giving you reasons to care.
Yeah, because when you're at the bottom of the standings, you have almost more reason to care than anywhere else in the standings.
There's no such thing as tanking in the EPL. You have to win every game, otherwise you're going to go down to another level. That's not possible in college, but they also play for various things. So
you have those random cups that you get to play.
Yeah, get the cups. You have the international competition. Not the international, the Champions League, and there's a one below it called the Europa League, which is always hilarious because it sounds like they're playing for a moon. Just to me.
Well, hey, now, Jim Delaney will tell you we play for plenty of things in the Big Ten, the most trophies of any conference. And we're making new ones
up
every week.
Freedom Trophy for freedom. Right. I mean, the Freedom Trophy is especially odious because they have no, you know, University of Nebraska and Wisconsin are fine institutions, but they have nothing to do with guaranteeing freedom.
No.
It's just.
We actually have some amazing trophies in the Big Ten, but as they've kind of forced fed us the last four or five or six new trophies, it sort of just dilutes the whole thing down. You know, for every axe, there's just some, you know, newfound, you know, freedom trophy that they're just trying to hoist onto us as new tradition.
Or the land grant trophy, which looks like a third grader.
And that's coming up this weekend.
Well, did you guys see the trophy that Minnesota and Nebraska played for yesterday?
No.
That was the genius concoction of Goldie the Gopher and Faux Pelini. Created the Bits of Broken Chair trophy, and they actually made this thing.
They made it?
Yes, it's here it is. Bits of Broken Chair trophy. Goldie the Gopher was carrying around after the victory yesterday, and it is the best damn trophy in the conference now. Apologies to Greg Dooley for besmirching the brown jug, but that thing is amazing.
I'm looking at it right now. It exists. It's spectacular. Man, Faux Pelini is like a phenomenon.
It really is.
Anyway,
he might be like saving Bo Pelini's job.
Should we even talk about football? We're really trying not to.
We're doing our best.
We're doing a very good job, I would say. Well, we should mention that Penn State lost hilariously to Illinois in the last second field goal.
Yes.
Like, Tim Beckman is the bete noir of Penn State, which is so hilarious.
Total yardage in this game, 283 for Illinois, 265 Penn State.
Was almost identical to our game against Penn State.
Yeah.
Ugh. So that happened.
Christian, I'm sure Ace is looking right at the box score, but Christian Hackenberg, I believe, 8 completions, right?
Yep.
8 completions, that's it?
Yeah, 8 for 16, 93 yards.
Wow. And then they didn't even try. 16 passing attempts. I think they're just too nervous to get him killed. You know, it looked like he was even hobbling a little bit yesterday during the game. Every Penn State game looks the same, guys.
He's been Gardner.
28 points in regulation combined in their Big Ten games is what's being scored. Oof.
You know, you actually feel bad for that defense, which deserves better.
That defense is really darn good.
But I guess you could say that about Michigan, too. Although I think Penn State's defense
is better. Got on the board early, that 7-0 lead, and Illinois got a first down on their first play of the game, and then they didn't get another first down until late in the second quarter when they switched quarterbacks. So, you know, the defense came right out and just dominated, you know, but they couldn't really generate a second score. They actually got down, they're up 7-0, they got down to 4th-and-1 at their 3, or at Illinois' 3, and instead of going for it, they tried to kick a chip shot field goal, and the holder biffed the snap, and they didn't get any points out of that.
Well,
they had 7-0 for the longest time. They bring Riley O'Toole in. He sort of gets it going a little bit. They get a touchdown drive out of nowhere before halftime, and they don't do an onside kick to start the second half, but Beckman has him do one of those
pop-ups,
you know, duck kicks that lands like at the 25-yard line. Yeah. And, you know, Penn State scrambled, couldn't get it. Illinois got it. They kicked a field goal, and they were pretty much in the game the whole rest of the way.
Yeah, man. I like Riley O'Toole because I like to think of him as Peter O'Toole's kid. And just he's quarterback.
Does that mean he's spectacularly drunk while
he's
quarterbacking?
Yes, like he's on a camel. I don't know why he's on a camel. But he's in full uniform on a camel, drinking gin. He's got like a manservant, I guess named, like Tim Beckman is his manservant.
Yes.
That works.
Yeah, so I this is what happens in my head when I hear the words Riley O'Toole. I envision an Illinois quarterback on a camel, like leading Tim Beckman along on a noose.
That's perfect.
So
earlier in the year, Penn State lost to Maryland in a game where Maryland was 1-for-15 on third downs. Yesterday, they lost to Illinois, and Illinois was 2-for-16 on third down conversions.
Well,
and Penn State's somehow going to a bowl game. So, great.
That's amazing.
Awesome for the Big Ten, whenever that happens.
Penn State's going to a bowl game. We're not going to a bowl game.
No. I think that's a net win for the conference, though. Michigan not going to a bowl game. But
Ace just moaned no, not in like the direction of the mic. He was just, he couldn't keep himself together. All right, let's move on.
I just
on.
Thought it was interesting that they only threw 16 times yesterday with Hackenberg.
Indeed.
Yeah, I know Illinois has been shaky on the run all year. So, I mean, that's smart to pound away, but I mean, you know, they've been throwing 35, 40 times a game with him.
We've spent far too much time.
That's like a white flag. Like they just
talking about
you
this
know,
game.
He's too hurt to really do much, and they can't really go to a backup. And now they got to play State next week. I mean, oof.
Yep. All right, moving on. Ohio State, Indiana. This is actually a shockingly close game, thanks to two Tevin Coleman runs that are hugely long. But Ohio State puts it on in the fourth quarter and kind of runs away with the game, as everybody in the world expected.
Can we talk about Kevin Wilson's substitution patterns for a moment? Because they get the 90-yard Tevin Coleman run touchdown.
Yeah.
Very next possession, Ohio State pins them down at their own 1.
Yeah.
Tevin Coleman does not enter the ball game.
He's probably tired.
And they throw it out of the end zone on the first two plays with Xander freaking Diamant, who nearly throws a pick on the second one.
Yeah.
And they get away with a holding in the end zone that should have been called a safety. What the hell?
He's probably tired. He ran a long way.
I probably have less problem with not having Coleman in as I would with the throwing because, I mean, you know, you're just asking for trouble with throwing with Xander in that spot. Yeah. I know it's super conservative to just run the football there, but
and the
you know, they
State
have faith in the in their backup. So I mean, I would have just run the ball there because you're right. Those are some dangerous plays there when you were leading, when you finally had some control.
Yeah, I mean they had a chance. A very small chance given that they were on their own 1, but to really
put some pressure on.
Yeah, and instead, just a really bizarre sequence of decisions by Kevin Wilson, I thought. I mean,
it feels like anytime Xander makes a good play, it's like a miracle. So,
do we have any?
I will say this, that when Tevin Coleman took that 90-yard touchdown run and, you know, they took the lead midway through this quarter, that might have been the best moment of my football season from a fan experience between Michigan and Indiana this year. That little moment, you know. Everybody at our tailgate was watching the game. Everybody just blew up because, you know, Indiana had taken the lead. It was pretty cool.
I'm afraid to ask what else is even in contention for best moment from this year from an Indiana / Michigan fan.
The point after the Norfleet punt return before the flag was well known.
That's true.
Yeah.
Also, when Notre Dame lost to Northwestern.
That's, I agree. That's
that was
one.
Fun.
That is like all I've got is Schadenfreude. So, all right, Iowa versus Wisconsin. Melvin Gordon, we've already discussed, got his record broken 1 week after he set it. But they basically dominate Iowa, as you would expect, and move on.
Yeah, I mean, he still had 200 yards rushing, and he had a career-high 64 yards receiving. And on the touchdown drive that really iced the game for the Badgers, he had a couple real nice catch and runs, and then finally, you know, scored on like a 20-yard touchdown run right around end. There was a perfect Kirk Ferentz moment for you guys here in this game. They were down midway through the third quarter. They're down 16-3, and they punt 4th and 8 on Wisconsin's 39-yard line. They pin him deep, so far so good for Ferentz ball. But then Melvin Gordon rips 88 yards, sets him up 1st and goal, totally flips the field on one play.
Well, that's what happens when you have a totally awesome offensive line and Melvin Gordon, all of whom happen to be on my draft again.
Yeah, I've got Tyler Mars. Kept you from the Monopoly.
Almost fired you for that. Anyway, Purdue Northwestern, why would we talk about this? I don't know. But Northwestern won pretty impressively. They've picked themselves up off the mat, thanks in part to Kyle Prater, of all people.
And a bona fide number one receiver all of a sudden.
And they've got a shot at a bowl game if they beat Illinois next week. So what looked like a total crater job might turn into an okay season. Like, you're Northwestern. You're not happy with 6-6, but you did beat Notre Dame, which is kind of like awesome.
And you're Northwestern. You're going bowling. So, I mean,
yeah.
Historically, there's not much to complain about.
They beat Wisconsin. What a weird year. They had the moon game. They beat Wisconsin and Notre Dame.
That Northwestern season is just fascinating. You know, they started 0-2. They looked terrible. And then all of a sudden they beat Wisconsin, and they looked like a threat in that division. Then they had a couple terrible weeks again, and then the upset last week with Notre Dame. Just what a roller coaster. And, 5-6 Northwestern versus 5-6 Illinois next week. Winner gets
the hat off.
The bowl game.
It's a playoff for a bowl game for the hat.
Yeah.
I'm always on Northwestern's side because of Bring Your Champions, There Are Meat.
Yeah.
Which I found out is actually part of an old Northwestern like fight song.
Really?
That line is in there.
That's incredible.
It is. I was like, where did he get that? So I Googled it, and I was like, oh, my God. The greatest fight song in the history of college football.
And, you know, you guys were talking about, you know, the 6-6 season, you know, probably doesn't make Northwestern fans happy because they've set an interesting bar of expectations there. I didn't realize this because I hadn't thought about it before, but Fitzgerald is really the longest tenured Big Ten coach. Is that true?
No,
Kirk
Ferentz.
Did I hear that wrong?
Kirk Ferentz.
That's right. I knew that couldn't be right with Fitzgerald. I knew there had to be one other.
But other than that, yes.
Wow.
I mean, he's been there a long time.
Yeah. And there's
the Jackson kid had another great game, had 147 yards. So they've got their new running back weapon for the next few years. They just have to figure out, you know, who's going to be their next quarterback. They played two different quarterbacks yesterday. So
they played three different quarterbacks. Well, they threw in Matt Elvedi for a couple plays.
Well, Elvedi was a four-star coming out of high school as a dual-threat guy. So, you know, this year they've been hampered by the fact that they don't really have any running game from their quarterback, and that's something that even when they had like a Dan Persa, like their offense is based a lot around having a quarterback who can get you 10 yards at a time and then the passing game that results from that.
Yeah, so, and they were doing it with Zach Oliver, the other backup who got more extensive playing time than Elvedi yesterday, is a junior who weighs 235 pounds, and they were just having him kind of plow forward for three or 4 yards.
Well, you know, it'll be interesting to watch them next year because they've been recruiting better, and maybe next year is when it comes through. Hopefully they won't have as much chaos with, you know, departures and injuries and stuff next year, because I generally like to see a good Northwestern team because of...
And they do seem perpetually snake-bit.
A terribly weird blog that I like a lot. Nebraska-Minnesota. Nebraska loses to the Gophers, which is kind of boggling. The Gophers are 9-2.
8-3. With an outside shot at the Big Ten West title.
And if they beat Wisconsin in the finale, they'll have the axe, the pig, and the jug.
And the bits of broken chair. Let's not leave this out.
And the bits of broken chair.
And the broken chair.
So,
well, I don't I don't think it's an outside shot. I think it's a winner take all game for the division.
Yeah, I was more saying that it's an outside shot that Minnesota will actually beat Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I
got you.
They're playing for it this week.
They're playing for it.
It's somewhat astounding.
That's probably one of the best seasons Minnesota's had in 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they had those.
Ever, but I remember that they were good.
They were very good in the 60s, yeah. And, you know, they had a couple of those years under Mason where they were legit.
When they had, like, three NFL running backs in their backfield at once for no reason. Yeah.
Thomas Tepe.
I don't know if they ever, you know, I think those teams probably were more talented just because of the, those running backs were amazing. But they never, ever really had a season like this, though, where they collected all their trophy games or were in contention still for the Big Ten title this late into November. I think, you know, the Big Ten not being that strong, I think, helps this year's team's cause. But, yeah, it's one of the best Minnesota seasons I've seen, for sure, in my lifetime. And what's impressed me about them here as their schedule has gotten tougher in November is, you know, they don't appear to be a team that could play from behind that well, but they fell behind against Ohio State. They came back and made it a game for a little bit. They fell behind yesterday 21-7 at halftime. They were down 24-14 again later in the second half. They had the one big momentum play go against them early in the game with a blocked field goal return for a touchdown that Nebraska scored. And yet they still just, they stick to that walrus ball game plan that you call it, you know, and they just can't get pushed off that. And I was really surprised in each of the last 2 weeks that they fell into a hole and were able to climb out and be competitive against a real step up in competition from what they had played in most of September and October.
Yeah, and then Jerry Kildance is in their locker room after the game. So
yeah,
they've got
having,
a good situation.
He's having a really good time, and that's kind of fun to see.
It is fun to see, and we shouldn't talk about him as a coaching candidate because it would be terribly wrong to take him away from Minnesota.
I kind of agree. I don't really – I mean, I don't see him as a coaching candidate because I just like where he's at. And, they're in the other division, so it's good to see them rise up. But, you know, they're just an interesting team. They don't do much. You know, Leitner had, you know, we were talking about how Hackenberg only had 8 completions, and that was a problem. Leitner has 8 completions, but he makes them, like, all count. You know, they're all daggers on third down to Williams or something like that, you know, and I can't believe they're a game away from getting a rematch with Ohio State with the Big Ten on the line. I'm kind of pulling for Wisconsin because I think Wisconsin might give Ohio State a better game. I don't know if Minnesota matching up the second time with Ohio State would look good.
No, I don't think it would either. And then of course
those conditions that they played in that game in Minneapolis where it was so cold and snowy. You know, I think without that element in the dome, I think that might be trouble.
Indeed, and then finally Michigan versus Maryland. Typical sludge fart Michigan game, last that Brady Hoke will impose upon us in Michigan Stadium.
Yeah. He gave us one last bad 2-minute drill in front of the home crowd, didn't he?
they got a field goal out of it.
They did. They did get a field goal out of it, but you know, they probably should have been able to run 2 or 3 more plays.
Yeah, they
when they got the first down with like 3 seconds to go in the half, I wasn't nearly as excited as the PA announcer was announcing that it was a first down.
Oh my God, we hadn't even thought about that guy. That's my worry, is that when Carl Grapentine actually has to retire,
they'll bring in the hoops guy.
That wasn't the hoops guy. That was some other random dude.
Oh, I couldn't tell from up there.
You know, but he sounded like a basketball guy, though.
He did. And then before that, we had Bill King, who brought that same gravitas. And just that is Michigan to me. Is like, we're just going to have this guy with the most sonorous voice you can have imaginable give it to you straight. We're not going to be like, it's another Michigan first down. When that guy said that, I heard the like Northwestern/Penn State growly thing in the background. Yes. I was waiting for them to go and it's just like you have to keep going with your thing. And I feel like Michigan is not going to do that. Like when Bud Lynch retired for the Red Wings, they lost something.
Yes.
And you needed to go find the new version of whoever that's going to be.
The Yankees went so far as to keep a recording of their since-passed PA announcer so that he could announce Derek Jeter coming out on the field every time, because I guess that's swinging in the opposite way in terms of hanging on to tradition in kind of a creepy way, but they did that.
That is creepy, but I like it. Yeah. I like it when you're a little bit creepy, because it's like...
If we end up with just like a Grapentine soundboard up there, I would not be mad.
Well...
be a little weird.
But I don't think it would be able to accidentally, like, say crap about the plays between, like, when he's not supposed to be on the mic about twice a game. So I don't know how we could get that. So I'm hoping that they realize that this guy is not, I mean, who's they? I mean, we don't even have an athletic director. And by the time Carl retires, we'll not have Hackett. So the they there is difficult to see who it is. But that's another part of the Michigan experience that I worry is going to go by the wayside, because their best option when Carl was out was this guy. It's another Michigan. Yeah,
he was a little bit too excited for my taste, too.
Well, and especially given the context.
Well, he kept saying, "You're Michigan Wolverines." And I'm like, I know. I've been here for 20 years. I know which team is my team.
I was waiting for pizza boxes to fly out.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we won some promotion.
Free pizza. So, yeah. And I would like to see them try to do the same thing with basketball, even though the guy in basketball seems fairly entrenched, unfortunately. But, you know, who wants some free pizza?
But that's almost become like kind of a chintzy part of the basketball experience in a way that I don't even get that worked up about it anymore, because it's just like, it's a different thing. You know, they're blasting rap music before the game, and I actually don't mind that because it's a basketball game and I actually like some of the songs that they decide to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's not bad. That's fine by me.
It's a basketball environment. It's different than a football thing.
It is, but I would like there to be an overarching Michigan thing.
That's fair.
So I've been thinking about what I would do if I was the athletic director, and I would be sort of ironically old-timey all the time. So just think about the program covers, which right now are incredibly boring shots of the players that nobody cares about.
Go back to the art, man.
Yeah, go back to the art and make it old-timey art, and have like Funchess like imitating those pictures where they're in the air. Like in the 30s, every football player just kind of hovered everywhere.
Yeah, just diving.
So
great.
Like just little things like that where you change the scoreboard chiron to look like it's made out of wood or something. Just embrace the idea that you are old timey, but have fun with it. Instead of just being a completely generic sporting event with nothing particularly Michigan about the experience.
Right.
And I would like to see that extend to basketball, but obviously basketball is a little bit of a different thing.
Yeah. And
like it has a culture of its own.
Yeah. And they've done some fun stuff with the between timeouts videos with players where you get last year, or 2 years ago when he was a freshman, McGarry singing Justin Bieber on the scoreboard in between timeouts to the point that, like, multiple players have to step out of the huddle because they're laughing too hard. I mean, that was just a wonderful moment that they just sort of – and sure, it was manufactured and it was kind of, you know, new timing, but, like, the hype videos that they do before the games for basketball are awesome.
This one's way too long.
Oh, I love this one.
It's way too long.
I like it. I think what they've done on the production there has been – for the most part, they have some weird things. Like this year, they've debuted the between timeout contests where they had pulled two people from the Maze Rage, have each of them stand at a free throw line and just dance to a random song for about 10 seconds.
They're doing that at hockey, too.
It's the most awkward thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
So, they could get rid of that, and I would not be unhappy. But most of the other stuff that they've tried out has been fun, at least, and kind of uniquely Michigan basketball.
Yeah. So another thing that I've been trying to push as a thing that Michigan should do is they should have their own, like, basically 30 for 30 department. And those are the things that should be going on during football breaks. So
there's certainly a lot of history to pull from.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that we can actually get one together ourselves and then have it as like our proof of concept, and then we'll see what happens. But the kind of things that I'm thinking of are things that other people don't do. And that was what the Brandon department never did.
No, they were trying to do what the New York Knicks were doing or something like
right.
that.
Right. And like that's the kind of like the corporate cover your ass mentality, right? Where you didn't get where you are today by being an inventive person. You didn't get where you are today by being a creative person. You get where you are today by watching everybody else screw up and staying at the office until 10 p.m. And I'm not that guy. And we've had success with the blog by doing it our way. And I think that Michigan would benefit by being something other than generic sports experience for. But did you have any hot takes on the Michigan-Maryland game?
No. But I mean, just to echo a little bit of what you said, there's nothing generic about Ann Arbor or the University of Michigan or the football program or their other sports programs. So, yeah, why run it like it's generic. And I like that 30 for 30 idea. I like that a lot. I actually stopped listening to you for a few seconds. I started thinking about, various topics, It's a good idea.
Thanks.
Would you fit it in like just two, like quick little 2 minute bursts on the scoreboard, like between commercials?
Yeah. After the band plays at halftime, like you got about 5 to 8 minutes there. So I was thinking they would be something like 10 to 15 minutes. And you would address a game and you'd probably try to get a quarter in per break. You'd have to like think of it kind of like a TV program where you like, okay, so how can we fit this in this amount of time? And the breaks are probably like 4 minutes. So I think it would definitely be workable. You just have to be careful about it. And then if you're a season ticket holder, you should get a DVD of those at the end of the year.
I like that. I like gifts.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, like I went to the hockey game on Friday night and they gave us a hat and it was a nice hat. It was nice. So you'd go to the underground printing and you would purchase this hat and it cost like $20. And I felt good about the fact that I had a season ticket for the first time.
Yeah. What a novel concept. Rewarding your season ticket holders.
And then they went and lost, but whatever. there are things there that don't cost you very much money that get you goodwill. And if you're looking at Michigan sports on a 100-year timeline instead of a 2-year timeline, then I think you come to the way you approach the department in a lot different fashion. That was kind of a Brady Hoke sentence right there.
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
What are you going to do? You don't have a script. You're allowed to sound like that every now and then.
Well. So, Michigan, Maryland.
Yeah. We're doing awesome at not talking about this.
Yeah, we're very proud of.
No real hot take.
All right.
I mean, we were talking earlier about how all the Penn State games look alike. I mean, all these Michigan games against the middle class of the Big Ten have all looked the same, and it's just been, an ugly coin flip if they win or not. Drake Johnson kind of ran the ball pretty well. That was part of the two-minute drill, wasn't it? He gobbled up like 40 or 50 yards on that two-minute drill that Michigan didn't really want to run until they got close enough to scoring when they decided to pick it up a little bit.
But, they ran the same play 5 times in a row, and it worked the whole time.
Yeah,
it was just like,
exactly.
What's going on?
Now, we had a good, I think I tweeted this out, we had a real fun last tailgate of the year. We were sorry to see it end, and by that we mean we were sorry to see the Michigan game start. That's a very mean-spirited thing, I think you could say. You can look at it that way. I'm not trying to be mean. We certainly went still into the game to support the team and all that. But, we weren't expecting much this season, and we didn't get a whole heck of a lot in return. But whatever.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to end it on. So we'll talk to you.
Oops is starting up. I've definitely noticed a uptick in enthusiasm on Ace's Twitter feed because of basketball. So, hey, it's all looking up.
It is. We will talk to you next week, Jamie.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Yep. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Hambender, along with Brian Cook. And since we barely talked about the football game for very good reason, I will just throw out there that Devin Gardner's touchdown run was wonderful to see, as was Brennan Byers' very awesome breakup of a screen, throwback screen that was totally going for a touchdown. So it was at least nice to see a couple seniors do something decent on senior day. And that's about the best that I can come up with for positive things.
The game is over.